Okay, this week's Sedra, Parshas Toldos. We have the famous incident of the brachas that Yitzchak planned to give to his son Esav. Yaakov, I was told by his mother to go in his stead and receive the brachas instead of Esav. So the pasuk relates, says Yelech ve'ikach ve'yevei limo. He's after his mother told Yaakov to intercept the brachas by bringing her some animals that she'll cook up for a meal. So he went, and then it says ve'itikach rifkas bigdei Esav benah hagadol achamudos asheri tavabai and v'talbeishas Yaakov benah katan. So she took Esav's clothing and dressed her son Yaakov up, you know, to make it a real good masquerade by taking Esav's clothing. So I saw an interesting question once. The source is the Chasam Sofer, actually, and he asked a very simple question. He says, "What right did Rivka have in stealing her son's clothing?" Right, we know that a shoel shelo midas is a gazlan, somebody who, quote unquote, borrows something without asking. That's a thief. So, without asking Esav, she's taking his clothing and giving it to Yaakov. Well, how could she do that? How could she steal Esav's clothing? So the one answer is given. I think the Chasam Sofer himself. He says that where do we learn the isser of stealing from a goy? From a pasuk in Shmuel, it says by Benayahu ben Yoyada, it says he took the spear. It says Vayigzol atachanit miyada mitzri. He took the spear from the mitzri, from the Egyptian. So we learn from there that there's an iser Vayigzol. It says stealing. You're not allowed to steal from a goy. However, when is that? He says that's dafka if as it was in that pasuk, what the pasuk referring to, meaning that it was stolen without intent to return, real stealing. However, if someone takes from a goy with the intent to give it back, in other words, as we called it, borrowing without permission, but you're going to give it back, then as long as there's no chilul Hashem involved, then that's okay. So therefore, that's why it was okay what Rivka did, because she was taking from Esav, who was like din of a goy, and she had planned on putting it back in the cupboard. It was just borrowing it, you know, for the time being, and it wasn't going to be a chilul Hashem because she was the mother of Esav, you know, it was her own son's clothing, so it wouldn't be a chilul Hashem, and therefore that's why she did it. So fine, you're the answer, but still it should bother us. Because, fine, maybe, you know, you can answer up, I was not really, really stealing. But surely you cannot say that there's a Midas Chasidus over here. You know, that she was, you know, going out of her way in keeping the, you know, the Torah to its nth degree. I mean, okay, maybe you can explain that I was not really stealing. But it's definitely not a Midas Chasidus over here. So it still begs to answer what? Why is why did she do this? Why wasn't she more machmir in the iser of stealing? Kitzur. So I was thinking an answer that a few psukim earlier, right, when her mother asked, when his mother asked him, Yaakov, to, you know, come instead of his brother and to receive the brachas. So it says that Yaakov didn't want to at first. Why? Because he said, look, he said, my brother's a very hairy guy, and I'm a very, you know, smooth person. Maybe my father's going to touch me. He's going to feel that I'm smooth. He's going to realize, hey, this isn't Esav, this is Yaakov. And I'm going to be a kimisatea, which is a mockery. I'm going to make a fool of myself. Right? It's going to be a big busha. I'm not going to get a bracha, I'm going to get a klala, I'm going to get a curse. So that's why I'm scared, I don't want to do this. So the Aznaim the Torah points out that we see from here that Yaakov was very scared of being embarrassed, right? If his father would catch him in what he was doing, he'd feel so embarrassed, that he tried to fool his father, and he'd be make himself like a mockery. And he points out interestingly that he said I'm gonna be a mockery. I'm gonna klal no bracha. Meaning, what was more in his mind? What was he worried about more? He was more worried about becoming a mockery than even getting a klala. First thing is I might become a mockery, and secondly, I'm gonna get a klala. Meaning, he was more worried about being a mockery than even the klala. So because it's a terribly embarrassing thing. So mimele, what can we say? You can see from here that a person, fine, it's very nice to be extra machmir, to be extra frum, right, to do the mitzvahs, 100%, but you have to realize that there's sometimes another side to it, and you shouldn't be extra frum at the expense of your friend. And therefore, so too with Rivka over here. Yeah, she could have been extra machmir in the isser of in stealing, and even though it's not really stealing, she goes, yes, but it's not, definitely like we said, it's not midas chasidus, and I'm not going to take my son's clothing, my Esav's clothing, put it on Yaakov. But she thought, wait a second, I could be extra frum in the mitzvah of stealing, but at whose expense? Here my son Yaakov's not going to, get dressed up 100%, and therefore there's a chance that my husband will realize who it is, and he's going to be a mockery, he's going to be totally embarrassed. So here I am being extra frum myself on stealing, but what? On whose expense? On Yaakov, and he's going to, become a big busha in front of his father. So I'm not going to be extra, machmir, just on my son's expense. So this concept, it's a famous concept in the by the Bali Musar. They bring out this idea in a number of different sources. I came across this idea. I thought about this when something happened to me a number of years ago. It was Rosh Hashanah, and here on the Moshav, and it was actually the second day of Rosh Hashanah. Doesn't matter. It would be the second day of Rosh Hashanah. And what happened was I'd in the rush of Erev Yom Tov, getting the house together, for 2 day Yom Tov here. So I'll get everything set up. And one of the things was we decided to use the oven for Yom Tov. Instead of the hot pot, we're going to use the oven to heat up our food. So I set up, I plugged out the oven, I put it into a Shabbos clock, plugged it in, set the timer, make sure it goes on the right time, etc. So we'll have hot food in the morning, etc. So, fine. What happens? That night, it was Rosh Hashanah night, and then I realized I'd made a mistake, and even though I set the Shabbos clock properly, I had forgotten the one small thing, turn on the oven. So the Shabbos clock was, going off and on, but not gonna do too much if the oven itself is not turned on. So the oven wasn't turned on. So I said, so much for that, so it looks like we're not going to have, we're gonna be able to use our oven and heat up the food. Okay, so what does that mean? Not the end of the world. Baruch Hashem, we live in a very nice moshav. And, take your food to other people, put on their blech, whatever. Okay, not the end of the world. But, what can you do? Fine. So, it was Rosh Hashanah morning, and I was walking to shul, and as I'm walking to shul, and I was thinking about this whole thing, I said, wait a second. It's not Shabbos, it's Yom Tov. So it could be that there's a heter in turning on the oven, while the Shabbos clock is not on yet, it's not, the electricity is not on yet, it's would go on if the oven would be on in an hour or so. And, so maybe there's a heter on Yom Tov to turn on the oven before the electricity kicks in, and, that could be. So I go up to the Rav, before davening, and Rosh Hashanah morning, and I asked him, I told him the matzav, and I said, what do you think? So he says, thinks about it, and he says, yeah, he says, shasa dechak, on this condition, you're not going to have hot food, and this, yeah, you could probably do it with the shinui. Probably do it with the shinui, and shasa dechak, it's probably okay. So I said, okay, thank you. But I got thinking to myself, I said, what? you know, well, come on, how can I do this? You know, here we are on the holiest days of the year, you know, Rosh Hashanah, and what am I going to do? I'm going to rely on a shas of the chag that, b'nei'ev, you know, you can turn on your oven, you know, forget it, I'm not going to do that. You know, on Rosh Hashanah, mele, this on what day of the year, but this is Rosh Hashanah, you know, everything's on, depends on the first days of the year. How can I go and then rely on this b'nei'ev heter of turning on the oven? So I said, I'm not going to do it, you know. But then, I remembered this divorce. I said, wait a second. I said, what am I doing over here? Right? I'm being extra from, you know, of course, Rosh Hashanah, extra from, you know, not going to turn on the oven. And what? But at whose expense? Right? Was in an hour or so, right, my wife's going to get up and have to start getting things ready, to heat it up, the things for the thing. What does she have to do? She has to get up extra early. You have to run around to this neighbor and run out to that neighbor and put in this plech and that plech and find who has room and when and this and that and then put everything on, and then when it comes time for the meal, you have to run to this house and that house and get this food and that. So, you know, so very nice, I'm being extra frum, you know, and then not, you know, turning on the oven, even though it's allowed, but it's okay, it's not the, you know, it's not a lot, a little, it's a bitty of a little bit, but okay, but who am I being machmir in, at whose expense? My poor wife has to stop around and then take things to this for that, so, you know, that, again, this idea, you know, you think you're being extra frum, but at whose expense? So I decided I'm gonna go home and I'm gonna turn on the oven. And Rav told me to do it with a shinui, so I had to like put the knob in between my teeth and turn the oven on. Okay, but I did it, and we had hot food, and that was another lesson. So it's interesting, though, that somehow people they don't realize this. You know, when it comes to their their from kind of, you know, being specifically ben adam l'makom, they're extra from always. When it comes, they see that they forget about, hey, at whose expense? You know, they forget about the ben adam l'chaver. It kind of takes a second place. There's an interesting base Elohim, and we see from this that, you know, the Torah realizes this. It's a very interesting vort. He says by the Aseres HaDibros. Okay, we know that there's 10 Dibros, 5 on each tablet, right, each side. And one side is the Ben Adam LeMakom, and the other side is the Ben Adam LeChavera. So he makes a very interesting here. He says, we know what was written on the Dibros. It says in the Torah, look in Parshas Yisro or Parshas Veschanan, right? You see what's written on the Dibros. So if you look at the first 5 Dibros, there's a lot of words. Right? There's a lot of words in the first 5 Dibros. The second 5, Lo Tirtzach, Lo Signo, like a couple of each Dibros, a couple of words. So he asks, how did the Aseres HaDibros look? You know, you can imagine your mind, one side full, you know, from the top to the bottom, and the other side, you know, a couple of lines. I mean, it was very unbalanced. That's how it looked. So he said, no, that's not how it looked. He said, both sides were totally full. Said, how could that be? How can you have both sides totally full? This has a lot of words, this has few words. And it's very simple. The side with a few words were written in bigger letters. Okay, so you had the Ben Adam LeMakom side with a whole bunch of little letters, and the Ben Adam LeChavero side, big letters. And what? What for? There's a lesson over here. Because it's like we said, because people, their extracts are machmir, always Ben Adam LeMakom, Ben Adam LeChavero takes a back seat. And therefore, Chosh Baruch wants to show these big, bold letters when it comes to the Dafko and Adam LeChavero, don't do this, don't do that to your fellow friend. Those are in big letters to hit home. No, this is also part of the Aseres HaDibros. Not only the Ben Adam LeMakom. But yet, like I said, I was thinking, why is this the case? It could be because people, I don't know, they think that they want, everybody wants to be, you know, spiritual. And Ben Adam LeMakom, okay, that's, you know, that's spirituality, all these, you know, weird mitzvahs and chukim and things. When it comes to this being nice to your fellow man, he goes, you know, that's not ruchnias, you know. Meanwhile, of course, that's not the case. You know, it's a mitzvah like anything else, Ben Adam LeChavero. And it's a mitzvah to emulate Hashem. And that's no greater spirituality than that. But people seem to forget that. I'll never forget this incident happened to me also. It's a small little thing, but it always reminds me when I speak about this. There was once I was, I went to the mikvah, as my minhag is, on Erev Shabbos. And the one Erev Shabbos, I go to the mikvah, and it's very quiet, hardly anybody there. Anyway, so I, you know, put my towel down on the railing, and I go take my shower, or whatever, go to the mikvah. And after I'm finished, I went to, get my towel and dry up and get dressed. So I go to the railing, I put my towel down, and my towel's not there. There was another towel. It was only mine there before. Now, there wasn't mine was gone, but there was another towel there. So I put two and two together that Mistama, somebody took my towel and okay, switched towels. So luckily, like I said, it was a very quiet morning and it was Mistama, not, you know, it wouldn't be hard to find my towel. So sure enough, I, you know, took that towel in my hand and I went to, you know, look, and I found a person, sure enough, sitting there, and he was ready, you know, had finished his, you know, shower and everything, and he's there with my towel in his hand, you know, wiping himself down and wiping his feet and this foot and that foot, and, you know, getting all my towel nice and dirty. And I said, excuse me, sir, but I think you have my towel. So he goes, no, I don't. It's my towel. So I said, no, it's my towel. You're using my towel. He says, no, it isn't. It's my towel. I know what you're talking about. So I said, no, look. He says, this is your towel. No, I found this towel on the railing. So he looks at it, and he says, looks at that towel, and then looks again at the towel he was, you know, wiping himself with. And he says, oh, yeah, yeah, you're right. You're right. It is your towel. So what does he do? Comes up to me. You know, gives me my towel, grabs back his towel, and that's it. And there I am, standing there, drenched, you know, out of the mikvah, holding his wet towel, a dirty wet towel that he just used, and he just took his towel back, goodbye. You know, so it hit me, I'm saying, this is so absurd. I mean, where are we? Okay, we're in the mikvah. Now, why do you go to a mikvah? You know, first of all, it's not a mitzvah deraisa to go to the mikvah for a man on Erev Shabbos. It's not a mitzvah derabbanan. It's a nice inyan or whatever. And here he's being extra, you know, machmir, you know, doing the mikvah on Erev Shabbos. When it comes to basic ben adam l'chavero, you know, use your seichel, the guy just, you know, you use his towel, and besides putting up an argument, but, you know, you give him your dirty towel, don't, at least let him use your towel and dry off. No, ben adam l'chavero, ben adam l'machom. On the contrary, we find a number of Maisim by the Gdolim that are, we see to the contrary. There was Maisa by Rav Moshe Feinstein, that's all, says that he always used to buy his matzahs from a certain matzah, you know, factory where they baked it, and for years. And then this other factory opened with supposed to be extra hidurim in baking, etc., in kashrus, whatever. So they invited Rav Moshe to visit the factory and check it out. So he did. He went over and he saw it was mamish, beautiful, unbelievable, extra chumras and this and kashrus, it was unbelievable. So he thought, you know, maybe I'll, you know, start buying from there now because, you know, it's extra hidur. But then in the end they found, he went back to the old factory where he'd been buying from, and he was back buying the regular matzahs every year. So they asked him why. So he said, very simple, says this idea. He says, you know, I was thinking, you know, extra hidurim, that's great. But at whose expense? You know, this guy is, I've been giving my business to him every year. And if I'm not going to buy from him, besides the fact that I'm not buying from him, I don't know if it's going to make the biggest difference in the world. But, you know, once he doesn't buy from him, or Moshe, you know, takes his business elsewhere to this other factory, and other people are mainly going to follow suit, and it's going to cause this guy a lack of parnassah. So again, yeah, but look at all these, you know, extra kashrus and, you know, it's Pesach and chumras, and isn't this amazing? Yeah, but again, at whose expense? You know, Rav Moshe, there's a, similarly the stipler, right? He did the same thing. You know, he used to go to the, at Sukkot time, he was looking for a lulav. He used to go to different stands, you know, where they're selling the lulav. So he would go to a stand and he'd pick it up and he'd check out the lulav and pick out one, you know, and then he paid for it. And then he went to another stand, and he checked out the lulav, finds one, pays for it. Goes to the next stand, every stand he goes to, he's buying a lulav and paying for it. And he comes home, and there's a pile of lulavim. He says, what's going on? So he explained that, he says, you know, he knows that everybody's looking at him, you know, he's the stipler. So I know if I'm going to go to a stand and pick up a lulav and put it down and go to another stand, nobody's going to buy from there. Everybody's going to think, oh, this is probably not kosher. Stipler didn't take the lulav from here. So I didn't want people to think that there's anything, you know, wrong with this guy's lulav. So I'm going to buy every stand he went to. You know, he doesn't really have, but he bought one. So nobody should think that this guy's lulav aren't good, right? Because everybody looks at him. So he's sensitive to the, you know, person's parnassas, feelings. And on the God, there's a Mice with Rav Moshe Feinstein. Says once he was visiting by somebody, and on the table was two containers of milk, okay, from two different companies. And story goes that he picked up one carton of milk, and then he put it down, and then he picked up the other carton of milk, and then he drank from that. So of course, people at the table goes, you see, he drank from this other company, mashma, the first company, where it was not kosher. Okay, it's not the least, he didn't think it was kosher enough, and the hekshar is not so good, and the word got spread, or Moshe doesn't hold by this hekshar, this milk's no good, and all of a sudden it spread, and people stopped buying from this other company, and their sales went down, and this, eventually, they, you know, the company was upset, they lost all this business, and they heard what's going on, because Rav Moshe didn't trust this hekshar. And they said they couldn't believe, what's wrong with our hekshar? So they went to Rav Moshe to check out the whole thing, he goes, what's happened, you know, what's wrong with our hekshar? So he says, what do you mean, what's wrong with your hekshar? So what's your hekshar? You know, we heard that, you know, you didn't want to drink our milk, and you took another milk because, you know, you didn't like our hekshar. He says, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know nothing wrong with your hekshar. Your hekshar is perfectly fine. So why didn't you drink? So they traced back this what happened. So then he says, oh, I know exactly what happened. You're right. I picked up the first carton. It was empty. So I put it down, and then I took the second carton and milk it, and I used it. So we see that, you know, people have their eyes on the, you know, eyes on the Gedolim, and they have to sometimes be extra careful, you know, in their act. But again, but they are, and they're always looking out for their fellow man, and making sure that, you know, that their Ben Adam L'Chavero is, they can be very frum, but not at the expense of their Ben Adam L'Chavero. So, another Maisa with the Shlomo Zalman Orbach, also famous Maisa, once he was on a bus, this intercity bus in Yerushalayim. He was on the bus, he's sitting there, and a woman walks on, gets on the bus, and she wasn't dressed so sneezily, maybe to say the least, I don't know. And she walks on, and she happens to sit right down next to Rav Shlomo Zalman. So he was very uncomfortable, you know, this woman sitting next to him like this. And the bus, you know, goes, and next stop, you know, Rav Shlomo Zalman rings the bell, bus stops at the next bus stop, he gets up and he walks off the bus, and he waited for the next bus, that same number, you know, to come around and take him where he was going. So his talmidim asked him, well, what did you do? Why did you do that? So he explained, he said, look, he says, I was sitting there, and this woman comes sitting next to me. Now, I was thinking, what should I do? I could just, you know, hide my head in the safer, and that wouldn't be a problem, and learn, you know, ignore her, I'll be okay. But it wouldn't look so nice. You know, here I'm sitting here, and this woman's not sneeze sitting next to me. It was just a stickle, you know, chil Hashem, that I'm sitting next to a woman like that. So that wasn't a great option. The other option would have been, of course, is to get up and to move to the back of the bus, find another seat. But he said, I didn't think that was nice either. Why? Because it would embarrass this girl, woman. You know, you're sitting there, and all of a sudden I get up to her and move away as if she has the cooties or something, you know, nothing's wrong with her. You know, so that wouldn't be nice. So then I figured, what's left to do? She doesn't know, you know, where I'm going, so I ring the bell, get off the bus, she just thinks I'm getting off at the next stop, and that's that. She doesn't know anything happened, and this way I avoid the problem. So again, that's the, once again, being sensitive to, you know, Ben Adam L'Chavero. This ends with one last Maisa, son, one of Rabbi Krohn's Sefer, and he brings the Maisa with, happened in the early 1900s in the old city. There was a shul, and they had this chazan that was a chazan for many years. His name was Rav Nachum, and he was a chazan for Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur many, many years. And as it happened, he got older, and he was nifter, and it was just before the Yamim Noraim, and the kehillah was wondering who's going to be the chazan for this coming Rosh Hashanah. So the rabbi of the shul was Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld, and they asked him, who's going to be the chazan this year? Rav Nachum was nifter. So he said he didn't want to say. He said, don't worry, everything's taken care of. So they're waiting, asking, and he didn't want to reveal. Came already to just before Rosh Hashanah, a couple of days, didn't tell anybody, nobody knew. Came Rosh Hashanah night, says, new rabbi, Kate, it's Rosh Hashanah, who's going to be the Bal Musa? Didn't want to say. Okay, people are still wondering. Anyways, came finally the Rosh, you know, Shacharis and Kiyas, and now came, here it is, time for Hinani, you know, for the Musaf, Bal Musaf to walk up to the Bima. And everybody's like, who is it going to be? All of a sudden, Yosef Chaim gets up from his seat, and he walks over to who? To Rav Nachum's son, right, who just lost his father a couple of weeks before. And he says, I want you to go up and be the chazan for Musa. So he says, Well, I didn't prepare. I don't know. How can I be the chazan? So he says, don't worry. You'll do a good job. You've been listening to your father for many years. Every year, I'm sure you know everything, you know, like that. And please, you know, we'd be honored for you to be the chazan. So, you know, no. But he convinced him, and he went up, and he did a nice job, and he was the chazan that year. So after davening, people came to Rabbi Yosef Chaim, and they said, Rebbe, how can you do that? He says, why? He says, well, come on. I mean, Rebbe, you know, we don't have to tell you the halacha. He was an aval. Right? He just lost his father. He was in Shloshi. Okay, and an aval doesn't daven for, you know, on Yamin Tovim for the Amud. So how could you ask him to... So he said, listen. He says, I was thinking, you know, who's in the Ezras Nashim? The late Rav Nachum's wife, right? The widow, right? The Almana. And I was thinking, how do you think she's going to feel this year? When after year, after year, after year, she's sitting there and there's nothing and listening to her husband, you know, Davin Musaf. And this year, all of a sudden, this strange person comes up and is a Baal Tefila. I said, how do you think she's going to feel? Terrible. Like, after all these years, does she really feel the death of her husband? So I figured the minimum amount of sensitivity to the Almana would be, if at least her son would be the chazan. Okay, it's not her husband, but her son, yeah, it's not so bad. The chetzi nechama. At least her son is going to take over. So it says also in the Shulchan Aruch that a novel's not supposed to be the chazan for Yamim Tovim, says, unless there's nobody else. So he said, as far as I'm concerned, there's nobody else that can be the chazan this year. Because only the son would be able to, you know, to make the almana feel a little bit better. So once again, that's this idea that we have to be sensitive, you know, we want to be mach, we want to be from 100%, it's important, we should, but we always have to remember that's the ben adam lemakom, there's always the ben adam lechaveiro. We have to be also sensitive to our fellow men and not to do things, not to be extra from on other people's expense. And as Beis Elokim said, we have to remember that the big letters are the bold letters of ben adam lechaveiro. We have to keep that in mind. And if we put our efforts in these areas, Kadosh Baruch Hu should see to it, these efforts, and lead to many schuyas, and to the ultimate schus of the coming of the Mashiach, Tzidkenu, Bimheirav Yameinu.